Blog Talk Radio.
The Abolitionist Hour. I'm your host, Carl G. Call in at 646-716-8652. And don't forget to push 1. Broadcasting from the southern plains of the greater Midwest in Kansas City, overlooking the beautiful Kaw River Valley in lovely Wyandotte County, Kansas, and occupied Osage Indian Territory. So greetings, ex-prisoners, partisans, communards, brigadiers, and lumpen proletariat. This is the Prison Abolitionist Hour podcast, celebrating 370 years of anti-capitalist thought through reasoning and rebellion. This is the Abolitionist Hour on Radio Free Kansas. This is the podcast for September 16, 2023. Tonight we're going to look at a few issues in Jackson County, and we're going to look at Stop Cop City in Atlanta, Georgia. And then later we're going to take a look at the Stillwater Uprising, where 130 prisoners refused to go back to their cells on September 3rd. And we'll hear from Unicorn Riot and IWOC members that were responding to prison conditions in the Minnesota State Penitentiary, known as Stillwater. First, we're going to start with a little grassroots organizing situation that we have on the ground here in Kansas City, where we've seen the act of co-optation from a group called Decarcerate KC. In 2018, the Incarcerated Worker Organizing Committee, in conjunction with DSA Kansas City, Democratic Socialists of America, we did research into the grand jury report and the inspection of the Jackson County Detention Center, and this was released in May 11th of 2018. Now, IWOC had put their address on the contact information. So this was a grassroots movement to stop the Jackson County Jail. What we've seen is co-optation, whether the folks in Decarcerate KC know it or not, whether the leadership knows it or not, but IWOC was never contacted about the Jackson County Jail. Instead, they chose direction from St. Louis by a group known as Action St. Louis, a political arm in St. Louis County. We noticed with KC Tenants, who took the direction of Action St. Louis to begin a political arm inside of KC Tenants. However, that is in conflict with the prison abolition movement. What we've seen from Decarcerate KC is a halt to organizing activities. We've seen with Action St. Louis the rejection of grassroots black and brown indigenous organizers in the Kansas City metro. They, in turn, have chosen their outside organizers to come in and give direction in conjunction with the Urban League of Kansas City. For some of our listeners who are becoming aware of grassroots organizing and movement building, it is the best interest of autonomous communities to push a movement forward. It is not the interest of Action St. Louis to come in and start directing and setting up film night and door knocking. This is to suck the energy out of the George Floyd movement and direct what talent that they develop into the organizational path of electoral politics. Once again, this is not abolition building. This is counterinsurgency. Class collaboration. This aggression will not stand. This is not prison abolition. This is not movement building. The Incarcerated Workers Organizing Committee, in conjunction with Democratic Socialists of America of Kansas City, we gave out over 2,000 flyers in 2018 at 18th and Broadway on First Fridays. We were there when the young woman was killed. We saw the police tackle the assailants. We saw how Kansas City Police Department failed to do a security audit and light that corner where those young kids were hanging out that night. We walked through that parking lot. The question has been, why do we need prisons? The question has been, why do we need policing? It is not the interest of Action St. Louis. This is not prison abolition. This is not movement building. Another issue that is related to Stop Cop City is movement to stop Jackson County Jail, which has been in a free fall since last March. In 2018, IWOC and DSA formed a committee to research the audit of the Jackson County Jail. The original Decarcerate Kansas City zine that came out the spring after the release of the Jackson County audit still stands true today for countermeasures as an alternative to a new Jackson County jail. Unfortunately, the bylaws of IWOC are not congruent with the new Decarcerate KC movement. There's been a change in direction, co-optation by an NGO. It's downright disgusting what City Hall has done, the audit of the Jackson County Jail. The summary was a failure to manage funding. The jail budget has not decreased since 2010. The jail failed to properly plan for its funding needs. As a result, it's spending more than its adopted budget. The jail and county administration has not effectively and timely deployed the funding it has received. The jail has failed to formulate a funding strategy to address its staffing and overtime issues. The jail struggles to supervise inmates. The cleaning of inmate living spaces is not properly managed, and as a result, these spaces are dirty and inmate wellness is at risk. The maintenance of the facility has been neglected. Failure to manage funding. The jail budget. Where are those salaries going? Phantom plant managers and engineers. The fight between the Sheriff's Department and the Police Department, resulting in two new jails being built in Jackson County.
Oh,
we felt compelled to report on the Stop Cop City movement and how Atlanta City Hall is pushing the direction of mass incarceration and militarized police. We've witnessed Israeli military do training sessions with the Kansas City Police Department. Shortly after, they were hunting Brian Lamb by helicopter, and within 10 seconds, he was murdered when the police arrived in his driveway. We know there is consistently 4 pregnant black women in the Jackson County Jail. We know the majority of the people in jail cannot afford a $500 bond. Why there is overcrowding in the jails. We see people like city boss Mariner Hunt Kemper financing child detention in Rhode Island. Prior to COVID was a visit to city boss Mariner Kemper at United Missouri Bank at 9th and Main. We find Mariner Kemper to be managing another $250 million in prison funding. We find money markets were created to share in the profits of mass incarceration. Elderly people on fixed incomes relying on money markets, the Pioneer Fund, Vanguard Fund, for survival. The system is evil. We see Hunt Midwest property being purchased for jails and prisons. We see Mariner Hunt, city boss, with his plausible deniability, yet his family corporation is profiting from new jails like in Los Angeles and in Phoenix. We find the Hunt family 360.org hiring eviction judge David M. Byrne, who has many conflicts of interest. If you look into the fraud of the Mormon Church, if you look in the ethical issues on Habitat for Humanity, while he was the eviction judge managing all other judges doing evictions. We see the flooding of the Jackson County Court, where years and years of records are frozen in blocks of ice. Judge David M. Byrne, appointed by Matt Blunt, son of the most crooked politician in U.S. history, the retiring Roy Blunt. The Jackson County Jail is every bit as serious of a political issue today as Stop Cop City. The only vindication is to pull the evil of mass incarceration up by its roots. Set fire to the prisons. This is the Abolitionist Hour on Radio Free Kansas. I'm your host, Carl G.
Hitler, the wickedest man on earth. Millions of innocent life in pit. Millions of people hurt. New names the all wicked man. And since you call them, oi, hey, Hitler, when you see a wicked man, you be screaming, holla, sing again. Hey, Hitler, oh yes, them are the devil's soldier. Oi, hey, Hitler, when you see a wicked man, you be screaming, holla. Oi, hey, Hitler, the murder don't eat for them, mama. Oi, the loving of some people on mildew. Could have been black, you could have been white, you could have been purple or blue. Where you come from, and them the business of who? Could it be Gentile, or you even a Jew? Them eat the bread of sorrows and drink the wine to kill. From them cross your thoughts, you better rise, you will. It no make no sense to tell them to cool and chill. Them a drink devil soup, and I take pies of pill. Oi, hey, little from you see a wicked man, you be scream and holla. Oi, them are the devil's soldier. Sing again. Hey, Hitler, can you see a wicked man? You be scream and holla. Oi, hey, Hitler, them murder don't even them mama. Well, a long time on the hear about evil, but Adolf Hitler bring it to a different level. To burn people's skin with acid was fun. Put them in front fire and squad, shot them with gun. Hey, bitch, you want to see an till the power land. At the same thing happen ya today. We just a murder in a different way. So sing it out. Hey, little from you see a wicked man, you feel scream and holla. Oi, hey, little. Oh yes, them are the devil's soldier. Sing again. Hey, little from you see a wicked man, you feel scream and holla. And wicked man, you be screaming Allah. Oh, hell it la. Oh yes, him at the devil's soldier. Sing again, hell it la. And you see a wicked man, you be screaming Allah.
This is from TheNation.com, Cop City and the Silencing of Dissent. What started as a local fight over $90 million 85-acre militarized police base in Willani Forest near Atlanta, known as Cop City, has turned into one of the most extreme cases of government overreach, oppression, and violence in recent years. City and state officials are covering up the police killing of a protester and waging a chilling assault on the right to protesters that risk setting a dangerous precedent. In January, heavily militarized police state patrol officers shot and killed Manuel Torrejita Turan, a nonviolent activist protesting in the local forest that Cop City would destroy in a hail of 57 bullets. In the immediate aftermath of their killing, law enforcement claimed that Torrejita possessed a firearm and fired first. That was a lie. Body cam footage suggests one officer shot another, and autopsies show Torrejita had their arms raised and no gunpowder residue on their hands when they were killed. Rather than investigate Torrejita's killing or reassess the approach to opponents of Cop City, law enforcement has continued to detain dozens of protesters. They have relied on baseless evidence and minor offenses like trespassing to charge more than 40 demonstrators with domestic terrorism. In a further attempt to criminalize the right to protest, a heavily armed team of Atlanta Police Department, SWAT, and Georgia Bureau of Investigation officers violently arrest three community activists for raising bail money and helping to find attorneys for the arrested protesters. Last week, Georgia Republican Attorney General doubled down on his political motivated prosecution of protesters, charging 61 people with state RICO charges, sending a clear message that the dissent will be punished, which was a step far even for the DeKalb County prosecutor. The indictment reads less like a legal document and more like a MAGA manifesto. It alleges that the date the police killed George Floyd was the start of a racketeering enterprise instead of a movement for justice. Many leaders of the civil rights movement used the same tools of nonviolent resistance. They famously ran bail funds. This raises the question, would the state of Georgia today consider the nonviolent activism of civil rights leader to be terrorism and arrest them for exercising their constitutional rights? Our rights to free speech and assembly and our due process rights to defend ourselves against politically motivated government charges are under attack, and it is not just in Atlanta. In Detroit, police beat and arrest Black Lives Matter protesters, then the city relentlessly prosecuted them. Years and numerous legal defeats later, the city of Detroit is now paying more than $1 billion to protesters whose rights were violated. In St. Louis, law enforcement routinely harassed and intimidated activists during the Ferguson uprising. Regardless of one's politics, every person in the country should be able to advocate for what they believe in, which is why it is crucial that we pay attention to what is happening to Cop City. We cannot allow for the suppression of our rights and to dissent. And while the repression is always intolerable, it bears noting that Cop City is the apex of injustice, tearing down trees in black and brown communities at a moment of reckoning with the climate crisis to perpetuate the prison industrial complex demonstrates an astounding lack of morality, foresight, and care for those living in the neighborhoods. This is racist. One of the forest defenders recently said, "The intersection between the climate crisis, growing inequality, and the militarization of cops is emblematic here, but it's a problem everywhere." Despite all this, Atlanta elected officials keep moving Cop City forward. In June, in the middle of the night, and despite hours of nearly unanimous public opposition from the black and brown residents, the Atlanta City Council approved tens of millions of taxpayer dollars for its development. And now, on top of all this, public officials are actively blocking a referendum on the facility, raising serious concerns about voter suppression. We stand against these dangerous and dystopian efforts to criminalize the protection of the planet, threaten the health and safety of black and brown communities, and transform political advocacy into terrorism punished with extreme charges and sentences. We call the Department of Justice to investigate Torrejita's killing, its subsequent cover-up, and the deprivation of civil rights through domestic terrorism charges against protesters. It's time to hold those responsible accountable. We must transform our approach to public safety and adopt policies and practices that will truly keep our communities safe instead of funneling taxpayer dollars into militarized policing and prosecutorial abuse. We must invest money in the basic needs of our communities and provide universal health care, public housing, universal child care, strong unions, and livable wages. We all have a right to participate in our democratic process, and that includes the right to nonviolently protest decisions our governments make. This is a critical moment for every person who values freedom from government overreach to stand in solidarity with movements for justice like Stop Cop City. These intensified assaults against activists are about so much more than the message they are intended to send in the moment. They are about silencing the voices of our democracy. This is the Abolitionist Hour on Radio Free Kansas. I'm your host, Carl G. From APnews.com, Judge blames Atlanta officials for confusion over Stop Cop City referendum campaign. By RJ Rico, September 13, 2023. A federal judge overseeing the case involving Atlanta activist referendum effort against a police and firefighter training facility accused city officials on Wednesday of moving the goalpost on the signature gathering campaign, saying they have directly contributed to a widespread sense of confusion over the matter. U.S. District Judge Mark Cohn ruled that he does not have the authority to force the city of Atlanta to begin processing the tens of thousands of signatures that were handed in on Monday by Stop Cop City activists, explaining that he cannot intervene while a larger dispute over the effort is awaiting input in the 11th U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals. But Cohn also said he was compelled to comment upon the vacillating positions of the City of Atlanta throughout this litigation. On June 21, 2023, instead of approving a referendum petition it had no intention to honor regardless of the number of signatures obtained by city residents. The city could have taken the position it later espoused in a lawsuit and disapproved the petition and unauthorized under Georgia law, Cohn wrote. The judge continued, the city instead opted to approve a petition for a referendum it believed and later contended was illegal. A proverb dating back over four centuries ago once again applies here. Honesty is the best policy. In a lengthy statement Wednesday, Atlanta officials denied having ever changed their stance on the referendum campaign and said, "Has consistently been the city's legal opinion that Georgia law does not allow for a referendum, but the city still issued the petition in gesture of goodwill and good faith." Over the past 3 months, hundreds of activists spread out across the city to gather what is said to be more than 116,000 signatures of registered Atlanta voters, far more than necessary to force a vote on the proposed training facility that has outraged environmentalists and anti-police protesters across the country. But activists who arrived at City Hall on Monday carrying boxes full of signed petitions were shocked when Atlanta officials told them the clerk was legally barred from beginning the process of verifying the forms, saying organizers had missed the August 21st deadline. The deadline had been previously extended until September by Cohn, but on September 1st paused the enforcement of that order, throwing the effort into a legal limbo. Organizers responded by asking Cohn to intervene, but the judge denied the emergency motion, ruling that he cannot step in while the matter is in front of the appellate court. Though he conceded that the appellate court recent pause leaves both plaintiffs, the Cop City Vote Coalition, and the city in a quandary. Atlanta Mayor Andre Dickens and others say the $90 million facility would replace inadequate training facilities and would help address difficulties in hiring and retaining police officers that worsened after the nationwide 2020 protests against police brutality and racial injustice. Opponents, however, say they fear it will lead to a greater militarization of police and that construction will exacerbate environmental damage in a poor majority black area. Organizers have modeled the referendum campaign after a successful effort in coastal Georgia, where Camden County residents voted overwhelmingly last year to block county officials from building the launch pad for a blasting commercial rockets into space. The Georgia Supreme Court in February unanimously upheld legality of the Camden County referendum, though it remains an open question whether citizens can veto decisions of city governments. Atlanta officials have called the petition drive futile and invalid, arguing that City Council 2021 decision to lease the land to the Atlanta Police Foundation cannot be overturned via referendum. This is the Abolitionist Hour on Radio Free Kansas. I'm your host, Carl G.
This is the Abolitionist Hour on Radio Free Kansas. I'm your host, Carl G.
You seek the only vanity and no love for humanity shall fade away. Fade away.
Yeah.
You check for only wealth and not for its physical health shall fade away. Fade away.
Give me the bang. Them a move too wild. A run down. What are them a do fi boost up them profile? Them a take it too far, more than miles. The example them a set fi black woman and child. Them sell out fi dollar bills and silver coins. Subliminally children a get hypnotized by them son teenage. And them start improvise, start carry gun and take one bag of life. Them say money and them God and them no need no other. Some of them really don't know themselves. Who no act like who no happy yet no envy the brother. Your soul is better than all earthly wealth. My friend, you better know yourself. We see them a go astray and them no want no help. The father a go beat them with a golden bell. These thoughts I won't keep to myself.
You seek the only vanity and no love.
Poor it is a crime, but look for new one of the time. Spending trillions on war, while couple billion have a dime. And the richest country, them were full of gold and full of oil. Them instigating tribal war and economic genocide.
And down in the ghetto, them a come and tell we lies. And I make a bag of promises I no can verify. But this a revolution, it will not be televised. The Rasta man now open every eyes, so I can see.
The rich is getting richer every day.
You want person to own the wealth, why keep it all to themselves? While the sufferer has a fit time to them bells. The preacher makes some money, yeah, tell the congregation. The Lord and those who help themselves. The leaders are like cedars, the leeches and deceivers. The words of mankind now shout itself. We are finished and vision, here is all of our creation. Each and every man a look out for themselves. Them say money, yeah, them dad and them no need no other. Some of them really don't know themselves. Who no act like who no. Yes, and I envy the brother. Your soul is better than all earthly wealth. My friend, you better know yourself. We see them and go after and them no want no end. The father I go beat them with a golden bell. He thought I won't keep to myself.
WagingNonviolence.org. The Stop Cop City activist facing RICO charges is a shining light on political repression. For the past 2 years, calls to stop Cop City and defend the Atlanta Forest have shaken the political and corporate establishment of Georgia's state capital. Although Atlanta City Council has approved a lease and funding for the massive public safety training center in the city's Willani Forest, the sustained popular Stop Cop City movement has effectively halted the construction. In response, local and state government have used a variety of tactics to move things forward, including police raids, which led to the killing of a protester, Manuel Tortajita Turan, a member of Earth First, Stop Toxic Prisons, and the IWW, the Industrial Workers of the World. Domestic terrorism charges against activists and highly controversial signature verification process that could undermine a proposed referendum. Last week, Georgia Attorney General Chris Carr announced a new tactic to suppress the movement, a sprawling 61-person RICO indictment under the state's anti-racketeering law. A website for Defend the Atlanta Forest, or DTAF, describes itself as a movement slogan and media platform made up of a dynamic and diverse collection of grassroots groups and individuals. The state of Georgia has taken a much narrower view, however. Carr's indictment paints DTAF as an anarchist organization that uses violence, threats, and property damage to promote extremist politics and criminal activity. Across 110 pages, terms like mutual aid and solidarity appear as dog whistles for anti-government conspiracy and an Atlanta-area bail fund accused of money laundering to support protesters' needs. Georgia prosecutors have deployed the state's expansive RICO law in a number of high-profile cases, such as Atlanta Public School cheating scandal, rapper Young Thug's YSL Collective, former presidential Donald J. Trump attempts to undermine election results. But this latest case against DTAF, which frames the decentralized social movement as a violent racketeering enterprise, represents a chilling new phase in the ongoing struggle between Georgia's political class and a huge cross-section of its citizens. I recently spoke with Priscilla Grimm, one of the activists named in the recent indictment. Currently living in New York City, Grimm's charges stem from the trip she took to Atlanta in March, where she attended a week of action that included protests, a music festival, arts workshops, and free clinic. We discuss her reaction to the RICO indictment, her past experience in Atlanta carceral system, and what activists can learn from Georgia's repeated efforts to stifle Stop Cop City demand. The biggest thing is people shouldn't be scared. She told me at the start of our conversation, this is a time for solidarity and a time to know that the ancestors have us. When you get the news about this RICO indictment, and did you have any idea that something like this might be coming? I was at Brighton Beach here in Brooklyn, New York, because I knew there was going to be some kind of announcement, and I just wanted to be in a place where I felt safe and happy. Now that we've all read the indictment, it's even more ridiculous than what I thought it might be. There are many mistakes in it. They lie in it. We'll see what the public has to say about it. It's a scary, strange, Kafkaesque situation I'm in right now. I don't know if I'm going to be kidnapped in the middle of the night with an arrest warrant. I don't know if my home is going to be searched by the police. I have no idea if I'm going to be required to go down to Georgia, check into jail, and wait until they give me a bond, or if I'm going to have a bond. It's all very nebulous right now. The thing that really makes me most upset in a situation is how it's affecting my daughter. She doesn't need to worry about getting her mom out of jail or raising rent money or doing any of that stuff. She needs to just be a kid right now. Talk to me in broad strokes about the community you saw while supporting the Stop Cop City movement in Atlanta earlier this year. What made me so excited about Stop Cop City movement was that it is so principled, so decentralized, and led by black and indigenous people based in Atlanta. With broad support from the most directly affected people, everybody was so creative and kind in all of these things that we need in the world. As a New Yorker who saw our city council vote to build new jails, even as the entire city said, we don't want this, it gave me a lot of hope. I want to be part of a movement that was actually bringing a demand and looking like they could possibly win. And it's still looking like they could win, which is exciting to me. We're all being abused by capitalism right now, and it is not getting any better. We have to make some real choices about how to stop the way corporations and the 1% are brutalizing us on all different fronts. The new indictment comes from the Fulton County, Georgia, where 10 people have died in the county jail this year. Back in May, you wrote an article for Scalawag detailing your experience being jailed in neighboring DeKalb County. What are some vital strategies for taking care of yourself and others while you are in the midst of that kind of violence? When I was in jail for 31 days at DeKalb County Jail, I had two mantras inside my head. The first was from Stephen Biko, South Africa, who famously said, "The most potent weapon in the hands of the oppressor is the mind of the oppressed." I'm not going to allow my mind to be turned against me. The other thing was understanding that Angela Davis went through something way worse than this, and she survived and thriving now. I was really looking at the activists of the past because we have transparency and real history that we can grab onto. I found out that on the first day inside, they would only give you two maxi pads at a time, and we'd have up to 30 people with uteri in the pod cage. I would ask for pads every single day so that I had a big stack that I would give to people when they needed them.
Kill the bill, love no be hate. You greedy politician, I feel like you care. Kill the bill, love no be hate. Religious leaders, I feel like they're saints. Where is the love that you preaching right now? Fighting against the vulnerable.
Prison, whether man or woman,
prison.
woman. Freezing. Woman dress feel like man. Praising. If they can't tell your gender.
Freezing.
If they're not sure of the sex.
It's our will.
The only reason we got blankets is because we organized everyone to submit complaints about the temperature. I work for Beautiful Trouble now, and we put out a self-care and resilient module to help train social justice trainers. All the somatic exercises that we talk about in that, I actually did while I was there. One of the biggest things you saw with other people, rocking our bodies to try to feel more in our bodies and find some calm. Some of the other forest defenders led yoga sessions. I led some meditative visualizations for people in which I basically took them on a journey outside of the jail. Even though we're inside of this terrible building filled with concrete, it was still part of nature and still part of the earth. If we touch the walls, we're still touching the earth and we're still connected. And we all have to believe that in order to survive, because part of the punishment is to separate you from society and from the earth. In the past, you had some involvement with Occupy Wall Street movement. How did this state repression that activists were experiencing back then compare to what we're seeing with Stop Cop City? I mean, policing is policing. Their job is just to put people in cages. They will say whatever they want in order to achieve the goal, which is to put people in cages. They arrested 800 people in the Brooklyn Bridge during Occupy. They would act with complete abandon. The only thing that surprised me with Georgia is that in New York City, if you got arrested for a political arrest, they usually sent you to a jail that doesn't have non-political arrests there because they don't want you organizing people inside. So we were actually helping people, giving them advice on their legal stuff, trying to do what we could to help raise bail for other people who didn't have money to get out because so many people in Georgia are just left in there. My last cellmate, who was there for a year and a half without a charge, was there because she couldn't afford $1,500 bail. She had a child inside the jail. Because of the situation, she had really high blood pressure, so they wound up putting her in medical solitary for 7 months because they didn't want her to die. She still hasn't been charged for anything. The RICO indictment focuses intensely on forest defenders, but the Stop Cop City movement has been much more than that. There have been solidarity protests in 100,000 signatures. Why do you think the indictment ignores that mass movement while framing this as a fringe organization? In my mind, this is purely a political game. This has zero to do with any of us personally and everything to do with allowing police and corporations to steal public resources from the people of Atlanta. For the amount of different tactics that people have tried and the amount of people both inside and outside of Atlanta who have come to support, this indictment is very intentional about framing the movement as anarchist. Do you think Stop Cop City has been ideologically rigid, as critics have suggested? No. This is why there's a whole Stop Cop City vote effort. This is the difference between the North and South. As someone who lived in both places, in my experience, the New York City people really get hung up on the ideological approaches to how to solve things. We have rent control here, a social safety net, and I guess having some of that makes people more comfortable in holding on to ideology a little bit harder. But in the South, it seems that people have more of a sense of solidarity and allow for a diversity of tactics within the community. It seems to me that it is in such a crisis that people always work together once a common interest has been determined. You know, if you fight, you could lose, but if you don't fight, you lost. The way Georgia used domestic terrorism and racketeering charges for these kinds of movements is a pretty rare sight. Do you think we'll see other places use these tactics on progressive and radical campaigns in the future? Not if we fight back appropriately. Not if we win these cases. that's kind of why I want to be as public as possible with my fight. We have an opportunity to really shine a light on how political repression works and what it looks like. If I want to live a life in which I'm an activist who is part of efforts that really change things, I have to be okay with the fact that I'm going to have some brutal uncertainty and actual brutality inflicted on me and the people around me. That being said, we're an activist in jail for ridiculous charges. Luckily, there's a real sense of solidarity with people all over the U.S. and in the world. You know, people have been charged with terrorism for giving money to Palestinian causes for years. I'm just trying to be the best activist I can be right now and expose the realities of jails in Atlanta, expose the realities of these charges being used specifically to frighten people into not engaging with political activism. They absolutely should, and they should not be frightened, and they should go full force into whatever they're going to change. Change this world because it's literally on fire right now. I'd like to thank WagingNonviolence.org for this interview and Priscilla Grimm for her belief in a movement that can win by fighting back with care, courage, and resilience. All power to Stop Cop City. This is the Abolitionist Hour on Radio Free Kansas.
Protection we need, Lord. They brought you in the society to protect us. Now you start to treat us like a dog. Don't even respect that I am your brother. And a civilian like brute. Policeman, where is the respect gone? Oh Lord, policeman, where is the respect gone? Yeah, policeman, where is the respect gone? I don't do you any when you say, policeman, where is the respect gone? You look at my grandfather with his gray beard. Turn and deliver, they call him a boy. Think of a puppy at my grandfather's age. Do you believe that he's a small dog? Oh, policeman, where is the respect gone? Oh yeah, policeman, where is the respect gone? You lost it, policeman. Like any other one.
This is from Stanford.edu/entry/anarchism. This takes a deeper dive into anarchism than what the state of Georgia believes anarchism is. And so I'm just going to briefly run through this. The last entry was October 26, 2021. Anarchism is a political theory that is skeptical of the justification of authority and power. Anarchism is usually grounded in moral claims about the importance of individual liberty, often conceived as freedoms from domination. Anarchists also offer a positive theory of human flourishing based upon the idea of equality, community, and non-coercive consensus building. Anarchism has inspired practical efforts at establishing utopian communities, radical and revolutionary political agendas, and various forms of direct action. This entry primarily describes philosophical anarchism, its focus on anarchism as a theoretical idea and not a form of political activism. While philosophical anarchism describes a skeptical theory of political legitimation, anarchism is also a concept that has been employed in philosophical and literary theory to describe a sort of anti-foundationalism. Philosophical anarchism can mean either a theory of political life that is skeptical of the attempts to justify state authority, or philosophical theory that is skeptical of the attempt to assert firm foundations for knowledge. There's a variety of anarchism. There's political anarchism, religious anarchism, theoretical anarchism, applied anarchism, black, indigenous, and decolonizing anarchism. Anarchism in political philosophy. Anarchism in the history of political philosophy. Absolute deontological and a priori anarchism. Contingent consequentialist and a post a priori anarchism. Individualism, libertarianism, and socialist anarchism. Anarchism and political activity. Nonviolence, violence, and criminality. Disobedience, revolution, and reform. Utopian communities and non-revolutionary anarchism. Objections and replies to anarchism. The objections and replies to anarchism that anarchism is nihilistic and destructive. Anarchy will always evolve back to the state. Anarchism is utopian. Anarchism is incoherent. Philosophical anarchism is toothless. And these are various forms of anarchism. Uniting this variety is the general critique of centralized hierarchical power and authority. Given that authority, centralization and hierarchy show up in various ways in different discourses, institutions, and practices. It is not surprising that the anarchist critique has been applied in diverse ways. This is the Abolitionist Hour on Radio Free Kansas.
The world and just move to an island. All of these people seek the neon enlightenment. We are blinded, but these are so money-minded. But music is my mission and your work my assignment. I come from Iceland, 3 times alone, land of diamonds. Pushing stones, bigger than a girl in the 9 months. America, turn the world in a time bomb. We ain't got no hood. We have real slums with 10-year-olds. I've been living on 2 hands with 2 sons and no clothes and no funds. I was deep down in the hole, giving up my life once. So insecure, I couldn't even see the sky once. Yeah, so my energy would grow out in silence. Are you gonna change the world? I would change it with my eyes. Yeah, we have to respond before the river turn dry. That far from the sky stays. Love is just the word, but I will try and I will change the world. Cause I'm a rebel, I kill the devil, yeah.
weird, what's blind, not straight, I hate, gonna stray, what's lost, what's vain, love fame, but my strength after day lays in yesterday's pain. I soared, was low, by boat, I chilled, I killed, I fell, I rode, you know, I lost a fight before, but I won't lose the war.
Thank you. check it out.
Rivers of Babylon, where we sat down, and there we wept when we remembered Zion. By the rivers of Babylon, where we sat down. In a strange land.
say, Monday is my day, Tuesday is my day, Wednesday to Friday to Sunday is my day. Tripping on the highway, mind on these flowers and the powers in my psyche, Lord God Almighty. Someone ring the sirens, we're gangsters with Jesus, riding with sirens, skateboarding with Nighty. Jamaica, give me Mikey, lock the city, then go country and farm on the pine tree.
All over me, and on the left.
This is from the Atlanta Community Press Collective. Block Cop City Group issues call for mass action to stop construction by Matt Scott. Just days after members of the clergy and other people of faith chained themselves to construction equipment at the proposed Atlanta Public Safety Training Center site, a new group, Block Cop City, announced plans for a mass action on November 13th to halt construction of the facility. It is useless to wait. The landing page of the group's website reads, "With our future on the line, and the whole world watching, will take a stand to bend the course of history. If the city government does not halt construction in order to listen to the people, then we will simply have to do it ourselves, a people's stop work order." The group says it plans to hold a 50-city tour in the run-up to the mass action, and then a convening in Atlanta during November 10th and ending with a mass action at the construction site. This is not the first mass action called out the multi-year protest movement, known as Stop Cop City Movement. The movement previously called for a 6 separate week of action events over the last 2 years, in which national and sometimes international movement supporters joined locals and traveled to the South River Forest in unincorporated DeKalb County, just outside of Atlanta, for a week of rallies, concerts, teach-ins, and food festivals, and sometimes protests. The fifth week of action held in March of this year came just a month after every construction work began at the training center site and saw the largest gathering of the six. The week began with the Wilani Music Festival, a two-day event invoking a native Muscogee name for the South River through the forest. On the second day of the festival, a group of 150 to 200 individuals departed concert grounds and walked about a mile to the training center site, where some of the crowd torched construction equipment and threw fireworks at a nearby police staging area set up to stop any protesters from entering the construction area. Law enforcement officers from at least 5 different agencies responded an hour later, raiding the music festival and arresting dozens of concert goers. Prosecutors charged 23 people with domestic terrorism, including an attorney for the Southern Poverty Law Center, who was working as a National Lawyers Guild legal observer at the time. The Stop Cop City movement is comprised of sometimes loosely affiliated groups of organizations using a variety of tactics in the pursuit of stopping the facility for which the movement is named. The newest group to the movement, Block Cop City, says November's action will not engage in the tactic of property destruction and economic sabotage used in March and other points over the past 2 years. The group plans instead to engage in a tactic known as nonviolent direct action, a style of protest commonly affiliated with civil rights movement's leader, Martin Luther King. This action will employ nonviolent tactics. The group's fact sheet reads, "Not because we accept the state's false dichotomy of legitimate and illegitimate protest, but rather because we believe that a commitment to nonviolent tactics will best allow us to stick together and overcome the police's attempt to isolate and divide us." Camus Franklin is quoted in saying, "If the city needs to see a demonstration of the people's commitment to this issue, we're happy to provide one." On September 5th, Georgia Attorney General Chris Carr recently unveiled racketeering RICO indictments against 61 individuals allegedly associated with the Stop Cop City movement. RICO convictions carry up to 20 years in prison in addition to penalties for the felonies alleged to underlying the RICO charges. The Attorney General's office argued that acts done to prevent the construction of the facilities fall under the alleged conspiracy. Some of the alleged acts listed as evidence in support of the indictment include one man signing his name ACAB, an abbreviation for All Cops Are Bastards, and reimbursements for the purchase of glue or food. Still, for additional association with the movement, there are a few ways to attempt to halt a facility that do not involve risk. For years, those opposed to the facility tried to engage in the traditional political system without much success. Cop City opponents called in dozens of hours of public commitment to Atlanta City Council over the course of summer 2021. On the day, it approved a ground lease for the Atlanta Police Foundation for the construction of the facility. The City Council heard over 17 hours of public comment, with an estimated 70% asking council members to vote against the lease the same day. The Atlanta Police Department arrested a group of individuals protesting Cop City outside the City Council member Natalie Archibong's house in East Atlanta. This year, opponents engaged in dozens of public comment against Cop City in June during the first run-up to the City Council vote to fund construction for the facility. On the day of the vote, some people waited over 15 hours for their chance to speak. Only a small fraction of those who spoke that day voiced their support of the facility. Still, despite the overwhelming opposition to the facility, the recent revelation that the taxpayer price tag of the facility was more than double what city officials had claimed, the City Council voted 11-4 in favor of providing $67 million to the Atlanta Police Foundation for the project. More recently, the Stop Cop City Vote Coalition launched a referendum campaign to add a ballot measure asking Atlanta voters to decide whether to overturn the ordinance authorizing the Atlanta Police Foundation's lease of the training center site. This, too, was met with hostility from the city. In July, Mayor Andre Dickens told reporters that the referendum could not succeed if it is done honestly. In legal filings, attorneys for the city have argued that the courts should strike the Georgia law enabling referendums rather than allow residents of the neighboring DeKalb County collect signatures on the referendum petition. Then in August, the city revealed plans to engage in a voter suppression tactic known as signature matching to validate or invalidate petition signatures. On Monday, the DeKalb City Vote Coalition turned in over 116,000 signatures on the referendum petition to cancel the lease. As they prepared to drop off 16 boxes of signed petitions, city officials informed coalition organizers that the city would receive and store the petitions, but would not begin validating and counting the signatures until a lawsuit currently in the Court of Appeals for the 11th Circuit Court is resolved. The coalition contends that the city can at any point begin to validate the referendum petitions or unilaterally act to put the referendum question on the November ballot. The 116,000 signatures the referendum coalition gathered represents 20% of the Atlanta's total population and is a larger number than the turnout of the last election in 2021. In August, Camus Franklin, founder of Community Movement Builders and longtime opponent of Cop City, warned that city officials' failure to adhere to the will of the people would result in opponents taking alternative actions to stop the facility. If the city needs to see demonstrations of people and commitment to this issue, we're happy to provide one, said Franklin. On the morning of November 13th, the group states masses of people from across the city and country will gather in the Wilani Forest and bring construction to a halt. Together, we can block Cop City. Local independent journalism takes time and resources. If you have the capacity, please consider becoming a subscriber or making a one-time contribution to the ACPC. You can donate here at theAtlantaPressCollective.com.
Downtown riot.
Downtown riot.
We go to Minneapolis, Minnesota, where there was an uprising at the Stillwater State Penitentiary.
About AC, clean water. Yeah. Say it with me. AC and clean water. One more time. AC and clean water. That's it.
Basic.
That's it. Basic needs.
I got a call from some of the inmates that I support. And they had said that there was a peaceful protest that was going down because they were being denied access to clean water, showers, food, and they had prior been on lockdown for 2 days, and they just couldn't go back inside of that cell. This is a peaceful protest. They didn't take any of the staff or the officers hostage. They only want their human rights. They are tired of living in inhumane conditions. This is their chance to stand up and let the world know exactly what Minnesota prisons are doing to the inmates.
Free Marvin Hayes! Free Marvin Hayes! Free Marvin Hayes! Free Marvin Hayes!
So my brother is Marvin Hayes, who has been wrongfully incarcerated for the last 19 years. Minneapolis police stole him from my family in 2004. He is currently serving a life sentence right here at this prison. Stillwater.
My fiance Cornelius Jackson is serving time for a crime he didn't commit. He's been down for 18 long years so far, and he's currently housed in Stillwater. The last time I talked to him was Friday, and he already knew that they were going on a modified lockdown, but they were expected to come out for at least an hour each day, and they haven't even been letting them out for that. They got SWATs going in there. They're not bringing in no cold water or nothing to the inmates. They're going in to fucking harass them. Harass the people that are already in there under duress. Like, what is, I just don't understand this. Y'all got all of these emergency evacuation team or whatever out here for the COs. They're the ones in there under air with cold ice water. But my man is sitting in his cell on one of the top galleys in there hot as fuck. Lord, I pray to God everything's okay. But again, we wouldn't know. They don't let us know anything about them.
It was a few months ago it was reported that the heat waves in Texas were so maddening, so hot, that the inmates took the protest against the water that was going through their system. They took the protest to no air conditioning going through their system. And I took a step back and I said, wow, Texas is really messed up. Governor Abbott is really crazy, man. He's got some razor wire on the border. That man's out of control. What's happening here? You all sit here and you interview elected officials and how they pride themselves on being so liberal and progressive, but this is the same shit going on here that's going on in Texas. So how are you going to tell me that Paul Snell is progressive? How are you going to tell me Tim Walz resolved it? That man just tweeted, I'm happy that they resolved it on BE. Tell me what's been resolved.
We have a staffing crisis in every prison in Minnesota. We have modified lockdowns becoming the new normal in every prison in Minnesota, and that is a humanitarian crisis. What they're not telling you, though, is that the Department of Corrections and the Commissioner Paul Snell has the authority to release more low-risk people today than are in this prison today.
Wow.
There are over 1,400 people who are low risk according to the Department of Corrections,
yes,
and qualify for the work release program. There is 1,245 people in this prison today.
Wow.
So if we have a staffing crisis, you can address the staffing crisis by letting people home for good.
What do we want?
Early release!
What do we want?
Now!
And the commissioner says, oh, the water is clean, we promise you. But they've never allowed an independent investigation to come in and test that water.
Tell that.
So you can say it, but you talk to the guards, you talk to the people in prison, which we do both, and they'll tell you they can get you a gallon of brown water if they want it to. So there needs to be an independent investigation, and we need to stop the Commissioner of Corrections from spinning everything to being something else. And we already have people in prison who are standing up very peacefully, very respectfully, and doing what they have to do, because the grievance system is a joke. There's no way for people to express concerns in this whole system. There's no way that people in prison are actually listened to. And so they have to do the extreme and risk their lives and risk segregation and risk SWAT teams coming in and doing who knows what,
yep,
to say, you shouldn't put us in 100-degree rooms.
Wanna ask a question? Then mom
Unicorn Riot reports prisoners face retaliation for protests at MCF Stillwater, Bayport, Minnesota. The incarcerated in the B East Wing unit of MFC Stillwater are suffering retribution a week after over 100 prisoners practiced an act of civil disobedience by refusing to go to their cells for a staff-induced lockdown. An email sent to the media on the morning of September 12th from a person housed in the B East details some of the retaliatory actions by correction officers and the aggravated charges that those demanding humane treatment inside Stillwater now face for their actions. Unicorn Riot has independently confirmed the identity of these letters. Quote, I'm writing this on behalf of many inmates in Minnesota Correctional Facility Stillwater. I am in a unit that was brave enough to take a stand against poor living conditions and corrupt staff. We are now officially off full lockdown, but the 130 inmates who participated in the protests remain in-house segregation, which limits our time outside our cell to 1 hour per day. After 7 days without a shower, we were finally allowed time to clean ourselves on Sunday. On Sunday, September 3rd, men housed in the B East Wing of Stillwater Prison were told to lock up in the morning before they could shower because the prison didn't have enough staff. With no air conditioning in the housing units, as temperatures neared 100 degrees that weekend, and with Labor Day the next day, the unit of men who worked all week in the prison factories simply wanted what they felt they were due, showers and recreation time. It's not okay for him to work all week, be told he would be locked down Saturdays at 2, didn't come out Saturday, Sunday morning, he called with a situation. Said a person, we aren't naming those loved ones in B East. Protesting the orders to lock down over 100 people in B East calmly kept playing cards in the rec area and refused to return to their cells. Word quickly got out that the public and the family members of incarcerated ones, along with advocates and organizers, showed up outside the prison to show their support. On the inside, special operations teams were ready to swarm the unit. A white tarp covered the unit from the rest of the prison. They're coming in suited up with mace, and I have my mask on. We said our goodbyes, knowing we wouldn't know when we would talk again, said an anonymous person whose loved one was NB East. The situation inside was handled with prisoners finally returning to their cells in the evening. However, the protesting had just started. Now with international news paying attention and advocates on the outside pushing the narrative from the inside, incarcerated demonstrators with a list of grievances over the living conditions were finally being heard. Protests for several consecutive days occurred outside the prison and in front of the residents in Minnesota for Minnesota Governor Tim Walz. Complaints over dirty and brown water have led to the Department of Corrections to supply each prisoner with 7 bottles of water per day. Past studies from the tap water at around Stillwater Prison from 2014 to 2019 found 6 cancer-causing contaminants in the water. Investigations into the water are now reportedly being planned by the Department of Corrections. The Department of Corrections disregarded the fact that they are the ones who incited this protest by increasing the prices of commissary, then limiting the amount you can spend from $140 to $40. Changed visitation to only 1 day out of the week, and not taking our poor living conditions seriously, such as extreme heat, brown contaminated water, and excessive unannounced lockdowns. Men housed in Stillwater now report that those in B East who protested their conditions are facing loss of privileges, extended segregation, and aggravated charges that could add time to their sentencing. The reality is that inmates are being punished for exposing the prison for what it is, which is a government-funded, inhumane way to financially capitalize on crime, said the person who wrote from B East. It goes back to the days of slavery, said the person who loved one inside Stillwater. When the men were taken from their women and kids and the slave owner did what he wished with them, our homes have been broken for centuries, almost like our families aren't as valuable as the white ones.
Mr. Cop, cool down. Hear me. the cop who did it. Put a smile on your face while passing through. Put away all the frown and that awful screw. We're just sipping a cup and having some fun. And it's better than in the streets bashing guns. Tell him, mister, tell him, cool down your temper. Mr. Cop, ooh-wee, cool down. We're just licking a cup and said, cool down your temper. Mr. Cop, cool down. Say we are just sipping a cup. In a bone. What don't concern you, please leave it alone. Cause the grass was made for the cows and ass. And the herb on this land for the use of man. Tell him, mister, tell him, cool down your temper. Mr. Cop, we're just licking a cup as it cools down your temper.
On September 7th, 4 days after the protest, an individual incarcerated across from B East reported that three people were targeted by officers and sent to segregation on charges of kidnapping and threatening staff. There should be no punishment for doing what's necessary to survive. The smartest thing to do was to stay out because locking in has put people's lives at danger at the Minnesota Correctional Facility Stillwater and has shown that they're in no position to protect anybody. They lost control to a peaceful protest of only 130 people. So just imagine if the entire facility took a violent stand against the DOC's wrongdoings. This is the third in our periodic letter from Prisoner series. The following text is commentary reflecting lived experience and or perspectives of the author who is imprisoned at a Minnesota correctional facility. The views and opinions expressed don't necessarily represent those of Unicorn Riot. See the previous entries, letters from prisoners. I'm writing this on behalf of many inmates in the Minnesota Correctional Facility Stillwater. I am in a unit that was brave enough to take a stand against poor living conditions and corrupt staff. We are now officially off full lockdown, but the 130 inmates who participated in the protest remain in-house segregation, which limits our time outside the cell to 1 hour per day, 7 days without showers. We're finally allowed time to clean ourselves on Sunday. I have the discipline report with me and the details of the charges placed on the inmates who participated in the protests, which include the charges of disobeying a direct order, interference with security procedures. Both of these charges were enhanced with an aggravated tag, which allows each violation to hold harsher consequences, although the situation was major, the violation report labeled it minor. By doing that, inmates who took their case to trial would not be allowed to call witnesses, and the case would not be heard by a central office. Instead, it would be heard by in-house hearing officers, which usually almost guarantee you'll be found guilty. This was a tactic to pressure inmates into signing a deal for 30-day segregation instead of facing a sure 60 days in segregation after the unfair trial. The narrative in the report is exactly this. On 9-3-23, offender was one of approximately 130 B East offenders that refused multiple directives to switch into their cells. All staff were given the order to evacuate B East. Two staff were unable to evacuate. Those two staff were trapped inside the B East bubble for the duration of the incident. B East was lost to offenders for approximately 8 to 9 hours. A command post was activated along with SORT, SOG, CNT, and multiple outside agencies. The narrative is a clear example of how the DOC lies and twists facts to meet the requirements of the story. They're trying to put out to the media saying staff were unable to evacuate and trapped inside the bubble is a lie. After hearing that this is the narrative being put out, inmates even cleared a direct exit for the officers to leave without being harmed. Camera footage will show that. The DOC disregarded the fact that they are the ones who incited this protest by increasing the prices of commissary, then limiting the amount you can spend from 140 to 40, changed visitation to only one day out of the week, and not taking our poor living conditions seriously, such as extreme heat, brown contaminated water, and excessive unannounced lockdowns. Some inmates told officers they only stayed out because they were in fear of their safety. Officers ignored the fact that if more inmates would have switched in their cell, there would have been no way for them to be protected from harm's way. The report says the unit was lost to offenders for approximately 8 to 9 hours, implying that during that time they lost control over the situation and had no say. So what went on? The safety of the inmates was overlooked, and inmates were still charged and stripped of their jobs. Officers were outside of the unit and safely in a security bubble, while inmates are still in risk of danger. The inmates who switched in and did not participate are in danger today. To switch in was a clear shot against the prisoner community. The inmates who didn't switch in their cell did what was necessary to keep themselves safe because the people who are supposed to protect us were nowhere to be found. There should be no punishment for doing what is necessary to survive. The smartest thing to do was to stay out because locking in has put people in their lives at danger, and the Minnesota Correctional Facility Stillwater has shown that they are in no position to protect anybody. They lost control to a peaceful protest of only 130 people, so just imagine if the entire facility took a violent stand against the Department of Corrections' wrongdoings. This prison is in no position to house prisoners, and an investigation should be launched against Stillwater. It's obvious that the protest that occurred was necessary, since then a problem that has been going on for years has been exposed finally. We have been complaining about having to drink and shower in brown contaminated water for years. Now that photos have been leaked and the news is giving us a platform, the DOC has decided to do something about it. They passed out water bottles, which has never been done before. But why now? It's only because of the protest, because we showed photographic proof, because we have people out there who are speaking on our behalf, helping regain our voices. DOC staff continue to go on the news and lie about what's going on in the prison because they know we have slim resources of getting our voices heard, but now that spotlight is on us. They want to act like they're making change, but these actions are long overdue. The reality is inmates are being punished for exposing the prison for what it is, which is a government-funded, inhumane way to financially capitalize on crime. If we didn't take a stand that we did and gain the attention that we needed, the prison would have continued to treat us wrong. The problem with the water is just one example of how, if we can prove something is wrong, they won't change it. It wasn't until the photo was leaked to the public that the problem was addressed and the water was passed out, but the problem has been for years. So if we didn't expose them, we wouldn't have been left with the same inhumane conditions. Please launch an investigation against the Minnesota Department of Corrections, specifically Minnesota Correctional Facility at Stillwater. This was from UnicornRiot.ninja. This is the Abolitionist Hour on Radio Free Kansas. I'm your host, Carl G.
This is Jeffrey McKee speaking to you from the Washington State Penitentiary. I've been a prisoner of Washington State since June of 2003. Today I'd like to continue my several-part discussion about the government-approved methods for prisoners to assert their rights or voice their concerns and how the government punishes and deters prisoners from using them. In my previous discussion, I explained the internal prison grievance system and some examples of how prison staff frustrate the ability for prisoners to resolve their concerns. Today, I wanted to discuss the court's role and the Prison Litigation Reform Act of 1996. So, a little bit of history. Prior to 1971, federal courts declined to intervene when prisoners complained of unconstitutional and horrific conditions within the prison. They viewed oversight and administration of America's prisons were under the executive and legislative branches of government. This was called the hands-off doctrine. The Attica Uprising of 1971 gradually ended the hands-off approach and began applying the Constitution to prisoners. 20 years later, prisoners had gained legal rights to adequate medical care, due process, to be free from physical torture, religious rights, and more. These rights were a direct result of centuries of neglect and abuse by the executive and legislative branches of government, which created and perpetuated these abuses. The Prison Litigation Reform Act of 1996, which was signed into law by then-Democratic President Bill Clinton, rolled back the court's involvement. At that time, over 40 state prison systems and hundreds of jails around the country were under some form of court supervision, either through injunctions or consent decrees because of prison and jails unconstitutional conditions. America began in the 1990s with 1 million people locked up in prisons and jails. I believe as these prisons and jails became increasingly overcrowded and under some form of court intervention, or overview, several state and federal legislatures and attorney generals saw the need to curtail prisoners' ability to enforce their constitutional rights, especially pertaining to the overcrowding. The act was part of the Republicans' 1994 Contract with America and sponsored by Senators Hatch and Abraham, by overzealous federal courts were micromanaging the nation's prisons and the judicial orders effectively turned control of the prison system away from the elected officials accountable to the taxpayers. I cannot help seeing the irony in their position because a prisoner is unable to pay taxes. The act was signed into law by President Clinton after passing through Congress, including the Senate Judiciary Committee, of which now President Joseph Biden was a ranking member. The act has essentially reverted the court back to the hands-off approach. It limits the relief the court can prescribe. Almost every injunction or consent decree previously entered was terminated because the act is retroactive, meaning it applies to cases prior to the enactment. The act limits prisoners' release orders defined as any order, including a temporary restraining order or injunction for relief, that has a purpose or effect of reducing or limiting the prison population, or that directs the release from or non-admission to of the prison population. Now, the COVID-19 exemplified the problem with this provision. As prisoners were dying from COVID-19, the court's hands were tied to mitigate the effects to early releases. The act also requires indigent prisoners to pay the filing fee and other fees, something indigent citizens are not required to pay. The last I checked, the filing fee in federal district court was $350. As of last year, the Washington State Department of Corrections paid its workers a gratuity of 47 cents an hour. The court does not require the fee to be prepaid unless the prisoner has had 3 previous lawsuits dismissed for failure to state a claim. And failure to state a claim can include the fact that after filing it, the prisoner was transferred, and therefore the lawsuit is considered moot. Once the prisoner files a suit, the prison deducts 20% of all funds received until it's paid off. That is 20% for each lawsuit, which allows the prison to deduct up to 100% of the prisoner's funds, and that includes any funds that are sent in by friends and family. The three-strike provision requires a prisoner to prepay the filing fee if they had pre-issues dismissed for failure to state a claim, as I explained. Only if the prisoner can convince the district court they are in imminent danger of serious physical injury at this time, at the time of filing, may the court waive the prepayment of the filing fee. But often when a prisoner sues prison staff, they are transferred to another prison and the state attorney general files a motion to dismiss as moot. The court usually grants these motions regardless of the fact the prisoner can be returned to the same prison under the same conditions. Several times after filing a lawsuit on prison staff, I have personally been transferred and all my files and evidence was withheld until I paid a shipping fee, which is around $150, because they require I pay to ship all my property. If I don't pay the fee in 90 days, all my property is destroyed, including my evidence of lawsuits. It takes several months to get a prison job once transferred. At 47 cents an hour, you can't save enough to pay the shipping fee. I've had a few cases dismissed because I didn't have the files after being transferred. The courts refuse to intercede because the prison is generally not a party to the litigation, and it is fault in the department, according to the court, is following its own policy. The United States Supreme Court has held when prison staff frustrates the ability to file suit, the only remedy is for the prisoner to file another suit, but he must show an actual injury to the litigation before he can get past the screening in the district courts. And that is going to be it for today. Next discussion, I will talk about the prohibition on prisoners' right to peacefully protest and why prisoners should have that right. If you'd like to learn more about this subject or any other aspects of prison life, you can write me at Jeffrey McKee, number 882819, Washington State Penitentiary, 1313 North 13th Avenue, AB108, Walla Walla, Washington, 99362. Or read some of my investigative journalism at www.prisonjournalismproject.org/ourwriters and search by my name. Thank you very much.